had people who have great ideas of why it should be a third of a wavelength, or a sixth of a wavelength, or a half a wavelength, or all kinds of things. I mean, the distribution of the answers is has a nice Gaussian curve to it.
Well, yeah, okay. Comment?
Sure, comment away. Also, you got problems with, you have guys who have vertical antennas that are designed for multiband. So their question is, how do I deal with multiband? Do I cut separate radials for each of the bands that the antenna is designed for? Do I build one that's the longest of all the possible bands? You know, there's all kinds of questions. You could fall into a rabbit hole. But if you want to comment, please comment.
Well, Roy, I thought the question that I heard initially was setting up a portable vertical. And a lot of this discussion has diverted from that original question, I think, which was, I'm setting up a portable vertical, sticking it in the ground, and what's the best way to deal with the issue of vertical, radicals, or whatever. So am I correct in my original assumption here?
Yeah, we kind of generalize the question for the sake of theory. If you're doing a portable and you want to put it on the ground, the two important things to decide upon is the length of the radials and the number of the radials. And in general, if you're going to place the vertical antenna on the ground directly, the more radials you place around it, the more efficient it becomes because the less ground coupling you get. You could theoretically use three or four radials. No one's going to arrest you, but your antenna's efficiency is going to suffer a great deal. At 36, you get kind of a compromise best-case scenario. You can improve your efficiency by increasing the radials to more than 36, but generally speaking, when people have kind of done that experimentally, it becomes a very limited benefit. So most people, when they recommend the number of ground radials, they tend to also recommend 36, but there's a Gaussian curve that different people will tell you 72, 68, 48, 90, you know, 92. Yeah, there's a whole Gaussian curve, but 36 seems to be the best bang for your buck as far as a ground-based radial system for a vertical.
PC?
Yes, Rich?
Yeah, to answer the gentleman's question, absolutely. This is for POTA activations, parks on the air activations. I have a 25-foot adjustable whip, and that is held up by a stand that's made for lights, for portable lighting. And then coming off of that is a one-to-one toroid or transformer. Not transformer. It's a toroid. I'm blocking on the word of blocking, you know, common mode current. And then from the bottom of the mount where it connects to the light stand, that's where the counterpoises are attached to. So, yes, it is only for portable work. It's not a permanent vertical.
Comment?
Yes, Sam, sure.
Well, you know, I've been looking for a tripod to use with, say, a vertical, and I see these lighting tripods. Have you found them to be strong enough to hold the vertical? Back to you, Roy.
Again, it depends. You know, there are lightweight photographs. Come in all kinds of different shapes, sizes, and weights, because the photographic lights come in all kinds of weights. So if you buy a heavy-duty light stand, again, it sort of depends upon how crazy you want to get with the antenna. I don't think that you could possibly conceive of an antenna that's heavy enough to kind of screw around with a heavy-duty light span. If you buy a light-duty light span, yeah, you can get into trouble and the thing can bend over and such. But, you know, it depends. You might want to experiment. They're not terribly expensive. I have a few kind of medium-strength light spans for actual photographic lights and such, and they seem rather sturdy. But, you know, if you want to belt and suspenders, you get a heavy-duty version, and that should work as long as you have the proper mounts for it. And you want to try and balance it as best you can and not put it in a situation where the wind is going to produce a lot of torque on it.
Well, what I use is water bags on the ledge. The reason I'm using a light stand, let me see if I have it. Yeah, the reason I'm using a light stand rather than a tripod is because I needed the legs to go flat on the ground so I could put these water bags on top of each leg. And the water bags, when they're filled up, are pretty heavy. So I put a water bag on each leg, and it's still a 25-foot whip. When you extend it the whole way, has quite a bend to it. Even without any wind, it has a bend to it. So a couple of times it did topple over on me because I didn't have the water bags positioned on the legs correctly. And I have yet to try it in any kind of heavy wind at all. I've been mostly in light winds, and it works. It works fine. But what the bend is, I'll bet you know, when a breeze is blowing on a 25-foot whip, the bend is a good 3 to 4 feet from center. It's a little scary to look at, but it works.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I mean, again, it's very difficult to tell someone over the radio of what will work and what won't work. It's more of a common sense and practical experience approach. And, you know, how much you're willing to invest in a high-quality, you know, professional heavy-duty light stands, probably the high end of the cost, and but they also will take a beating more than any of the lesser types of light stands out there. But it certainly is doable. You just have to be cautious and understand how the forces are working on your setup. You know, torque is one of those things that people don't take for granted. It's very important. You don't want everything to kind of bend over in the breeze.
A comment?
Heavy duty light stands are called C-stands, like for Charlie, C-stands, and they run about $125 to $150 each. Mine isn't quite as heavy as that, but I think it's still better than a photographic tripod, if that helps.
Comment?
Yeah, they're kind of meant for different things. If someone wants to say something, feel free.
This is Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf. What is the effect on the antenna or the frequency or the efficiency of the antenna when there's a wind bend of 3-4 feet that was just described in the 25-foot vertical? How does that affect usage of that antenna when you have that type of situation?
Well, again, it sort of depends on things. I don't think it's significant. It might be noticeable, but I don't think it makes or breaks an attempt to activate POTA. Rich, have you noticed any significant loss of efficiency during those windy times?
No, I've been looking at the difference when it bends on SWR, and it does change the readings a little bit, but not enough to knock it, you know, from a, let's say, a 1 to 2 SWR to a 3 SWR, nothing like that. Maybe just a couple of points, like from a 1.2 to a 1.4 or 1.8 SWR. And at that point, I let the antenna tuner take over. But as I said, when you look up at it, at the third, let's say 5 feet or 10 feet from the top, it's bent over in the over 3-4 feet. So it looks like it's going to topple over, but most times anyway, it really doesn't. Go ahead.
Okay. I mean, it would be concerning to me to go to a 1.8 VISWA, but, you know, it probably at that point it's coming close to becoming parallel with the ground, which is not a good situation for an antenna, but, you know, you know, the whip has a certain tensile strength, and, you know, if you want something that's more rigid, you're going to have something made out of a material that's more rigid. But it shouldn't be a severe circumstance, you know, unless, you know, if it's terribly windy, there are some conditions where it's probably best not to use that type of an antenna. You know, all antennas are kind of compromises, and, you know, flexible whips certainly are their Achilles heel is a strong wind.
Yeah, well, the other way to do this type of antenna is to use a wire instead of an adjustable whip. But I like the fact that I can lengthen and shorten the vertical, the whip, while I'm looking at a rig expert's antenna analyzer, and just stop where I see a good SWR on the band that I'm interested in working. So that's the way I use this portable whip. I bought a coil, quote-unquote, 40-meter coil off of AliExpress, and the damn coil had an M10 thread, an M10 thread on both sides, female and male. And the only way I can convert that to a 3/8 inch was to buy these little adapters. And four little adapters cost $16. $16 for these little adapters to convert from metric to 3/8 of an inch. That's what really got me on this antenna build.
It's a shame you can't, you don't have a machine shop. You could do that yourself, but that's why these guys make money. Okay. Someone wanted to make a comment, I believe.
Yes, at WB2BX, Sylvia, Echo Link. ATAVTWB, high gain vertical. Probably don't remember those. And antennas that were supposed to work on all bands, 80 through 10 meters, with the emphasis on supposed. My dad and I had it ground mounted in our backyard in Canarsie, which about five blocks from the Canarsie Pier, for those who know the area, for many years. And the only band that antenna worked effectively on really was 40 meters. It seemed extremely inefficient on the higher bands, running a TR4, which was some over 100 watts out. I had the same signal as the guys running 5 watts to a dipole. It functioned very poorly. It did reasonably well on 40 meters. In fact, I worked the world with it, and with an SB220 and later an Ameritron amp. more of a fantasia on long path, with two ground rods, no radials, and had, for the most part, a 1-to-1 SWR at the low end of 40. That was, as I said, the only band that got out well on. I've read some years later that a ground-mounted vertical, for some reason having to do with the physics of the thing, only works well up to 10 megahertz, and above that it doesn't work well, and that certainly matched with my experience. With regard to the 128 radial design, I don't think the length would matter, if I remember correctly, with a number like that. And I believe that HF, that would be essentially the equivalent of putting a metal plate under it at HF, because the longer wavelength would not see the gap between the 128 radials. I think broadcast stations, probably some broadcast engineer on who may say I'm totally wrong, and that's fine. I think what the broadcast stations, the AM broadcast stations, used to do and may still do is they put a metal mesh under their ground-mounted phase vertical antenna system that I would presume worked quite well below the 160 meter band. Go ahead, Roy. WB2BXL.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. My understanding, though, is that you have to be very careful for those mesh contraptions. You have to weatherproof them against corrosion, because where the wires kind of interlock with each other, all those little junctions are fine when you buy them and you put them down. But if it's not properly weatherproofed and they corrode, they're all sites of nonlinear devices, and you get harmonics generated every time an RF wave passes through these corroded junctions, because they act sort of like diodes. So you got to be careful for the mesh. If it's done professionally and it's weatherproof, they're great. Otherwise, they're a time bomb. When you first put them down, they're great, and over the years, they get worse and worse.
That was our experience with the ground rods. We eventually had a lot of difficulty with rectification causing RFI, and I think the landlord planted his garden over our radials. We couldn't dig up his gardens to go get rid of all the corrosion in case something of a problem. Go ahead.
Yeah, you got to watch where you put your flowers, I guess.
Well, it wasn't us putting there. It was a landlord who knew nothing about amateur radio and just kind of thought that, you know, once we put up the antennas, you know, that was it. You know, he kind of didn't really get, you know, as we do, it constantly had to be maintained, you had to be able to pull the coax out and replace it and all that kind of stuff. Civilians, so to speak, don't know these things. Go ahead.
Yeah, out of sight, out of mind for most people.
Yeah, well, anyway, you know, we were in a rental apartment. The landlord was kind enough to let us stick the antenna in his garden, but it was difficult to maintain. And we put some dipoles on the roof, and then eventually couldn't get on the roof anymore to maintain those. These are things that become a problem when you don't own your own place. By the way, in terms of a stand, I used for a number of years in my apartment in Brighton Beach, I put a 3dB gain Hustler collinear on a microphone, very heavy microphone stand in the corner of my bedroom, and that obviously didn't need to withstand any of the beachfront weather, but that worked well for a very sturdy microphone stand, worked well for quite a few years. Okay?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, there's cheap versions and expensive versions of everything, and usually the expensive versions, or even the medium price, don't cut too many quarters. But, you know, especially Chinese stands, you know, I'm sure if you get the cheapest one that you can possibly get, if you blow on it too hard, it'll fall over.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple of years ago, I took, I think it was a small business sales course related to some freelance work I do. And, you know, one of the things we discussed was how retail things are priced. And usually if you buy a lot of things, you know this, there's usually three different price points. And the one that vendors, you know, the retailers expect to sell, and probably the best one to buy is usually the item at the middle price point is the best. You don't want to buy the cheap one. You don't need to buy the premium one. So whatever you're buying, you buy the one that's middle price. You have to take a sales and marketing course to learn how to buy. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's one of the many things they should offer in public schools, but nowadays they don't teach you how to read an analog clock and write scripts, so why should they teach you how to buy and sell things? But yeah, it makes sense to me. I mean, I've mentioned a couple of times on the technical net of the atrocity category called prosumer, which is just another way for marketing to kick the price up and rationalize why. Yeah, if you go to the real high end, all that happens is they put some useless bells and whistles, some features that you'll never want or use. So, yeah, the medium is probably the best, but, you know, it's also the manufacturer. I'd much rather have an American-made stand or a German-made stand than say, a Chinese-made stand. There's a lot more range of ricky-tickiness for the Chinese-made stands.
Yeah, I remember reading somewhere that one of the reasons the Germans lost in the Second World War was they over-engineered things. Everything had to be en ordonged. I think your German's probably a lot better than mine. Absolutely perfect before they'd let it out of the factory. And, of course, they let what a friend of mine in business likes to call, they let perfect be the enemy of the good. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was bad. It was also that they kicked some of their smarter engineers out of the country.
And I fear this country is not learning from history and making that mistake. You know, but that's a whole other conversation. Go ahead.
Yes, indeed. That would be perfect grist for our political net on the repeater at 3 o'clock in the morning. But, I mean, mankind has never learned from history. Most people are ignorant of history, unfortunately. And those who aren't ignorant of it, they think that they're special. So the way that it turned out the last 5-10 times that people tried it is not going to be the way it turns out this time.
Talk about grist for the political net, yeah. But anyway, yeah, I would say if you're going to operate on based on my empirical experience, and I believe there's some physics behind it, as I said, if you're going to do POTA operation on the higher frequencies, you want to get the antenna up in the air with elevated radios, and you probably get better results. If 40 meters and below, assuming the antenna is long enough to proper length to be resonant, you might get pretty good results ground mounted. WB2BXO back to net.
Okay, very good, Frank. I'd love to find a technical explanation for the difference in higher frequency and lower frequencies, and in terms of why it works in some verticals and not others. But I'll rummage around Google and see what I come up with.
As the late great Dick used to say, that's your homework for next week. Go ahead.
Yes, indeed, the good old days. Thank you, Frank, as always. Appreciate your participation here. Rich, any more to say on this particular subject, or you have any other questions, or what have you?
No, that about wraps it up. I do want to say on a wholly other different subject, if anybody's interested in CW and either learning the code or getting better at it, I just finished an 8-week course given by CW Academy, which is part of CW Ops. Free of charge, 16 classes all told, and it was fabulous, just fabulous. And they give you all these tricks and of the trade, and you learn more about CW than you ever thought was possible. So their next series, their next semester starts in September, and the classes usually fill up very quickly. So if anybody's interested, just type in CW Academy, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, Rich. Thank you for participating. Interesting question as always, and we'll talk to you down the line.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul. Paul first, then Brian second.
Okay, question for Rich. How many days a week in each class time-wise? Was it a half hour, 1 hour? Back to you.
It's 2 days a week, and each class is an hour. And it they do it over Zoom. Very easy to do, not complicated on the computer at all. And I had a fabulous teacher. He was just amazing. A guy from Rhode Island. And there was one student who was down in Colombia. So it goes all over the world. But it was just a fabulous, fabulous experience. I'm going to take the intermediate over again. The beginning is from you're just learning code to about 10 words a minute. And then the intermediate is from roughly 15 words a minute up to 20 words a minute, and the advanced is from 20 upward to 35 or 40 words a minute. And so I'm going to take the intermediate over again because I'm about 20 words a minute, not quite ready for the advanced class yet. So 2 times a week, an hour each session. Mine was from 7 to 8 on Tuesdays and Fridays.
Okay, good to know. Do they concentrate on head copy or writing it down or both?
Well, actually both. They say writing it down is okay when you're in a CUSO, and they really push getting on the air very heavily. But for practice and getting your code speed up, it's only head copy, which I had a problem with because I'm used to writing everything down. And it's tough to go from pad and pencil to just remembering what the words are. But I've gotten better at it because of this class, and I hope to get even better at it. So good question, Paul. It's both.
Okay, good for that. That's great. Yeah, well, you know, when we took all the, when we took tests, and you went all the way up the line, everything, you really had to write it down because the questions that they were giving you, there's no way you were going to remember, you know, a couple of, 3 or 4 minutes of transmissions and trying to remember, you know, the call letter or you know, or what the occupation was. It would be too, I would find it very difficult to, back in the old days, to do it with a head copy. But, you know, that's the transition that you have to make when you go to the highest speeds. That's what I'm doing now, doing the head copy. Very good, Rich. Thanks.
That's why they say it's okay to use pencil and pad in a CUSO, because you have to write down the call, you know, and the guy's QTH or whatever. So you do need pad and pencil for that, but not for the, you know, the meat of the CUSO. So you should take it. I don't know if you'd be in the advanced class, Paul, because it also has a lot to do with things about CW other than just sending and copying code. There's a whole world of CW out there that I never knew existed, and it just makes it so much more interesting than just learning dits and da's. So check it out if you can, Paul. W2BZ.
Yeah, we'll do. I'll go for the you said the last class was 20 and above. That's fine with me. I would start there. I'm pretty quick now, Rich. I'm listening to ARRL at 35 for practice now. So, but yeah, I would definitely do it. That's great. Thanks. Back to you, Roy. WS.
Coffin.
WB2BXO with a question. Yeah, I know. I realize I can look this up, and I will, or maybe my buddy will. Buddy on the West Coast who been operating sideband only for the last couple of years and said he wants to use CW. Do they do, CW Academy do classes later in the evening for the West Coast folks? If you know offhand, otherwise I'll look it up. Okay.
Yes, they do. I think the latest class is 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. It may be 10 to 11. I'm not quite sure, but at least it's, very least it's 9 to 10.
Okay, that may work for him if he's interested. Thanks, WB2BX.
Someone wanted to comment?
Yes, the CW class, how do you go ahead and get into it? Is there a web address?
Yes, just go to CWOps, CWOPS. I'm pretty sure it's .com. It may be .net. And you'll see in a list of things, CW Academy, and just click on that, and it'll explain everything.
Thank you, sir.
The amazing thing about it is it's free.
I just checked it out on the web. You're absolutely right, and it sounds great. Thank you for sharing that.
By the way, the instructors are very serious. It's not a lighthearted thing. They're very serious about CW and teaching CW. It's just wonderful. I can't say enough about it.
Comment.
Yes, Brian.
Oh, I'm looking at the site right now at cwops.org. and looks interesting. They call it celebrating the unique art form of Morse code. I like that.
I saw somebody wearing a T-shirt that said, "If it's not CW, it's Citizen Band." I had a big laugh at that. People who do code, who do CW, a lot of times just do it exclusively, don't own a microphone, or haven't pushed a button on a microphone in years. And it's gotten very, very, very popular now because of POTA and SOTA, especially POTA. I would say 80% of POTA is CW. And a lot of younger people are getting into ham radio and getting in right into POTA and CW. It's a big balloon in interest in CW right now going on.
Yeah, I guess that's the same people who buy vinyl records and flip phones, right?
It would be interesting to correlate the two and see if there's any kind of connection there.
Boy, I missed that. What was the comment?
You want to repeat yourself?
Yeah, I said I wondered some of the younger people doing CW are the same people buying vinyl records and using flip phones. In fact, Stephen Colbert did a segment on this a couple of years ago, and he actually said something like this. There is a book on it. There's a marketing term for it called the analog resistance. I'm going to have to get the book. It's an interesting concept. WB2BX.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of... Yeah, sure, comment.
The great thing about CW is that it's a dying art. And I think it's really cool to participate in a dying art. And it is an art. I went from, at the beginning of the course, I was at about 15 words a minute. I'm now at about 20. But it's been a hard slog, trudge. It's been a hard trudge. And I think the younger you are, the easier it comes to you. And I've got some years on me. So it's been, they ask you to do an hour practice a day. They ask you to commit to that, an hour a day. But there's something called, anybody who's interested in learning or getting faster in CW should Google CW Ninja. This is a guy who's put practice lessons together by the hundreds. The guy's amazing. CW Ninja. Back to you, Roy.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, I just want to comment to Rich. I spent a lot of time on CW Ninja. It is a very good site. Page after page, you can scroll down doing different things. They get your word recognition up real quick. Instant character recognition, that's a big thing. Very good. I forgot about that one. I just spent a lot of time on that. As well as the ARRL sites. They have loads of data, different speeds from 7.5 all the way up to 40 words a minute. So a lot of good things on the computers, and you'll notice, maybe Rich notices, he's been around a while. If you listen to these contests, I mean, they always went fast. They would send their call fast. Now they're going faster than ever. These people are coming out of these, and just a copy the call letters. You have to listen to some of these things two or three times before, at least sometimes more, before you can hear the call that they're sending when they're calling CQ, you know, for a contest. Back to you, Roy.
Comment?
I forgot to mention that CW contesting has become a huge thing also, Paul. You're right. And, Paul, did you say you could copy at 35 words a minute?
That's what I'm listening to now, trying to, you know, pick out the words. No, I'm less than that, but that's the speed I'm listening to, trying to figure out what I'm listening to. That's coming off the ARRL site.
Comment?
Yes, comment.
Well, in the old days, you were a novice. And as a novice, you had 5 words per minute, and you were able to communicate with other novices at 5 words per minute, and of course, you generate skills to reach 13 and go for a general. The problem today is that people are moving so fast in CW, or are transmitting so fast in CW, and a lot of it's even automated, that there isn't that space that used to exist where you had the opportunity to progress as an amateur in an amateur world. Do you understand what I'm sort of saying? That the way it's done has radically changed and has changed the fun of it. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I understand. Rich, you should know a lot better than I. Aren't there frequencies kind of set aside for guys who are just beginning, who are operating more slowly?
Yes, and there's an organization called the Straight Key Century Club, SKCC, and I think they're about, 7.100 or 1.110 up there. The fast guys are down lower in frequency. You're right, Roy. They're down lower in frequency. And yes, the young guys, well, I don't know if it's all young guys, but during contests, they're flying with CW. Their minimum, I think, is 23 words a minute. And to me, it's just a blur. And I've sat there trying to get these guys' calls right in my head, like after 5 or 10 times, and it's still too fast for me. So I understand what you mean by it's taken a little bit of the fun out of it, but if you go higher in the CW portion of each band, you'll find slower people. So I would say 7.70 or 14.070 and above, you'll find slower people.
Okay, very good, Rich. So did you get that, Sam?
I wrote it down.
Okay, very good. I think you got a couple of customers, Rich, for the group. So I wish you they gave you a rebate or something.
Yeah, well, the fact that it's free, I had this amazing teacher. His name is John Merkel, AD1JM. He was just amazing. And as I said, it's more than just learning to go fast with CW. It's all about POTA and the contests, and there's relaying of traffic. There's so much to CW that I didn't know at all about, that it was really mind-boggling. And the tools they give you, there's one tool called, it's a software program that my teacher wrote and it's instant character recognition. They play a character, and then you have to voice it. Like if it was, they play it, you know, da-da-da, and you got to go, okay, like that. And then it times you how fast you respond to what the letter is after you hear it. And it's very frustrating to get the bars go from red to yellow to green. It's very frustrating to get all the bars in green. You almost have to anticipate what the character is that they're sending to get a green bar. But it's I've learned so much about CW that I never knew. I'm amazed. I've been a ham radio operator for 62 years, and I never knew this about all this stuff about CW. And I hope to get up there to 25 words a minute, and then I think I'll stop pushing myself. But I think it's going to take me a year to get to 25 words a minute. Also, field day was too fast for me. The guys, you know, on CW and field day were flying also. So I made a pledge to myself that this time next year I'll be able to participate in field day.
Katie 2, FYU.
Yes, George.
Thank you, Roy. I want to ask Rich. You mentioned some frequencies on 40 meters in the lower portion where they're really flying away with CW. It's very high speed. And, yes, there was some room for lower speed CW. Can you go over that again? And that is to help some of the technicians who have come in recently understand what portion of CW that they're going to be able to work with lower. So I'm asking you, Rich, where did you say they're really flying away doing high-speed CW, and where are they coming in at 5 or maybe 10 words a minute? Over to you.
As a general rule, just a general rule, you'll find slower speeds at anything above .50, in other words, 7.050 or 14.050, anything above that until you run out of the CW portion of the band is where you'll find slower speeds. Anything below it, especially like down around 30, you're going to find people going fast. And that's just basically where you'll find people. 5 words a minute, I don't think you'll find. 10 words a minute, I think you'll find. And 10 words a minute, it's pretty easy, especially if you take CW Academy. 10 words a minute, everybody should get in no time. Except if they're coming from not knowing the code at all. Not knowing what an A is, for instance, or a B, not knowing any letters or any numbers, it may take a little longer, but I'll bet you at the end of the 8-week course, you'll be able to copy 10 words a minute in the beginner's class. So, once again, anything above 7.050, you'll find slower speeds, especially anywhere above 7.070, you'll find slower speeds. And if you look around the 100s in there, you'll find that Straight Key Century Club, that SKCC, where people are going, you know, 8-10 words a minute around there because they're all using straight keys instead of paddles.
KD2FYU. Roy, can I continue?
Certainly, George.
Oh,
Okay, so on 14 it's irrelevant because technicians don't have privileges on 20 meters. But let's bring technicians into the hobby and wanting to work HF, and they're given the privilege of 7025 to 7125 with 2 watts and whatever speeds they can come in with. So you're telling me at 7.070, give or take, up to the end, which is 7.125, people are going to be working 10 words a minute. So if technicians coming into the hobby want to work 40 meters, they're going to be really cramped. And they're not going to, what, nobody's going to answer them? Nobody's going to want to get in? Meanwhile, they're getting their license as a tech, knowing that they want to work 7025 to 7025. I'm doing this not on my behalf, but on behalf of technicians that are coming in.
Well, that's the way it is. That's just the way it is. The higher portion of the CW portion of each band is historically where slower people operated. And, you know, around 7.030, 7.020 is where you're going to find the speed demons. I don't even listen down there anymore. It's just too fast for me. But the middle of the CW portion and on up, you'll definitely have enough people to find to either just listen to or get into a QSO with. And sometimes, you know, what happens is when you get to a certain speed level, you don't really want to work anybody who's much slower, you know, to be honest with you, because it's just boring. It's actually too slow. Like, if you talk like this, and I know it's tough on the technicians, George, but they could find plenty of people at 10 words a minute, let's say 8 words to 10 words a minute, up above 7.070.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and that's the way it has been for a long time. So what we got to do is help people understand who are coming into the hobby that you have more limited portions where you're going to work. Oh, and by the way, that's also where a lot of high-speed data is going to be working, in that portion of the band. The real high-speed 7.0 to 7.025 CW is very exclusive to that. People want to work super high speed over 7.025 are now in hearing. And if they're just blowing like that, it's a gentleman's respect. And thank you for this response, Rich. Roy, thank you for bringing me in. KD2FIU, it's not for me. I was just trying to help some technicians that have just come into the hobby. Can fit in around 40 meters. 20 meters, not yet. But back to you, Roy, KD2FIU.
WS2N.
Thank you, and yeah, Paul.
Another group is the Long Island CW Club. They have literally thousands of members. And excellent group. There's a charge for that, for getting involved with that. I am not a member of that, but I've heard great reports. Anybody that wants to learn CW, that's really a great place to go. Long Island CW Club. And by the way, if you go on let's say 7.07 in that area, you just have to watch out for the digital modes. The same for you know, 80 meters and all, you know, you get near the dot 7 area, you're going to find, well, you'll hear it, you'll hear the digital mode. So, if you're going to go CW, just go a little bit before that or a little bit after that. You're going up to the 100 area, no problem. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, Paul. Thank you again, George. And thank you, Rich. You brought up a second subject. Thank you very much. Anyone with any comments on this particular subject before we move on?
Comment?
Sure.
QST Magazine has a list of amateurs who achieved 10 words per minute and are recognized for that accomplishment on a monthly basis. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, it's the CW proficiency test. And one time I kind of semi-cheated. I didn't submit anything, but I used the CW decoder. And then I took the source material and ran it through the internet. It was a Victorian novel. God knows how they got the text for that. But, yeah, that's the CW proficiency test.
You know, as Paul was saying, Roy, the ARRL broadcasts CW every day of the week on, 7.47.50, and they do it at different speeds, and they take it from QST articles. They just translate them into code. So anybody who just wants to listen from five words a minute and up, just tune around 7.47.50, and you'll hear the ARRL on 7 days a week.
Yeah, W1AW does that. And if you go to the ARRL's website, they have a listing of their scheduled transmissions for all the bands, all the time. I think the proficiency is once a month, but the other stuff is, every day is something a little different. And, yeah, they go through the steps. They start slow, and they work their way faster and faster, and it's a way of testing your ability to figure out what your how fast you can decode. So, yeah, they have a lot of good little things that they have hidden away that aren't well advertised.
WB2BS, sir.
Yes, Frank.
Yeah, very good. Problem. It's not as bad as it once was with the broadcasters are now, for the most part, above 7200, but it's still pretty compressed. You have FT8 in the most presently the slow CW band, FT4 a little above that. Then the general FT8 frequency, of course, is 7074. And then occasionally you get FT8 and the Foxhound mode guys, I think, on 7056 and a couple of different other places. Anyway, so it's kind of compressed. I think if they're still around, there was the 5th CW Club. I know they used to be run by, and I'm trying to remember her caller, Nancy Cott, Lower Peninsula of Michigan. At least used to run that. I think she, look it up and see if they're still active. I think they are. I think they suggest the slow speed CW frequency around the 0.050 range for whatever it's worth. But that's, they used to be kind of dedicated to slow speed CW. And by the way, a lot of people forget, I hear other DX and contest operators forget, that low-speed CW is much more effective for very noisy paths on 80 and 160 meters. and you hear guys operating at 20 or 30 minutes, 20 or 30 words a minute, and it's like, I can't copy that through the noise. I have to look up on the DX cluster or RBN what the call sign is. Who's on that frequency? God.
AC2GS. Well, also, the slower the speed, the